This is a conversation with Katharina Halm. Hi, Katharina.
Hello, Serge.
So, Katharina, you have been a dancer, a focusing trainer, and a Feldenkrais practitioner?
Yes.
So how did you get from being a dancer to Feldenkrais and focusing?
When I was dancing, I often had a role with a partner, both in the classical ballet and the musical theater. So I wanted to be safe with those flying leaps. And also in the event of a fall. And that led me to martial arts. I studied Aikido, which was very, very interesting as a complement to the dancing. And I continue the martial arts today. And in a way, the dancing continues today through the focusing and the Feldenkrais, which have together a way of pausing and being there in the whole of a situation. And as I sense into it now, it's almost like being all alone on a big, big stage. It's dark and quiet. And then the world begins to form.
So that sense of all alone on a big, dark stage, and you're pausing, and the world begins to form.
Yes. So perhaps you are wanting to have more of a story or more of my sense of how these go together.
So it feels very nice to have a sense of we can go into either direction, and I'm just tempted to follow where you are right now.
So maybe just pausing a moment. Yes. So as we know from focusing, we are in the moment. Each moment is new, and also each moment encompasses everything. Each moment holds all of our situation, of our knowledge, of our way of being in the world. So Feldenkrais is nice in having small movements that are developmental movements, that are movements from our core, very small, perhaps rotating around our axis.
So as you're talking, what's happening is I'm noticing you moving very gracefully. And unfortunately, people who listen to this recording will not be able to see you. And so I want to interrupt you to describe a little bit the movement that I see, because in a way, just hearing your words is missing also what's happening. And you're talking about these movements around the axis, and you are actually moving your whole body around the axis of your spine. And at the same time, you're also moving your hands. And there's a very, very graceful sense of movement that's coming up. So as I'm listening to you speaking about movement, you are actually all movement, and all movement around the axis. And so there's a beautiful quality, again, that wouldn't be seen from just listening to the words.
And we can invite the others to join us through the words. Yes.
Great, great.
We can invite, yes. So maybe hold, let your elbow rest in one hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, let's just see. And then what happens if your elbow rests in one hand and it's in front of you a little bit and the other elbow is tucked into your waist or tucked into your torso somewhere so that you can make a little shelf with one arm. Let's say your left arm is holding your right elbow.
Mm-hmm.
And your left forearm is perpendicular to your body. Your left forearm is forward, like a little shelf on which your right elbow can rest.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens, perhaps you see your right hand might be near your face or on the side. It just naturally happens when your elbow is tucked, your left elbow is tucked, your right elbow is resting, and your shoulders are soft, and you can feel your breathing maybe more in your belly. And that hand in front of you, maybe the fingers like to turn a little bit towards you and away. And it's a little spiral movement in your hand, in your arm, right to your elbow and through your other arm. And maybe your eyes like to follow your hand. If you're sitting in the chair, you may notice that your weight goes onto one sitting bone, a little, and the other. Maybe even smaller movement, so that somebody in the room watching you would not even know you're moving, even a little smaller. Very delicate. If you're standing, you may notice that your weight shifts from one foot to the other. So maybe that's enough. You can let your hand soften, let it slide onto your face, let your hand slide down your neck to your sternum, and maybe both hands can hold your belly for a while. So that was rotating a little bit around your axis.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the ways that we can begin a Feldenkrais lesson or a focusing session.
Mm.
Yes. And I'm drawn to speak a moment about the active pause which you develop, Serge, as a focusing practice of holding a small object in one hand and then passing it to the other hand. If we try to do that gently, everybody all together here, maybe you have a pencil or a stone, or some of us have a little black ball, a little black squash ball with a yellow dot that we keep in our pocket. And one of my students has an egg because she has chickens that give eggs every morning. So she passes her egg as her active pause. Yes. But so many people enjoy the active pause. I did want to bring it in at the beginning of our talk today.
So what I'm noticing as you were doing this, again, there's your hand movement that's there. And that sense in listening to you, and again, that I'm trying to communicate to people, that you're very connected to movement. And you're connected to your body through the experience of movement. And that feels like something very important. That's the experience of interacting with you, of seeing you be.
Yes. One of my teachers is Maxine Sheet Johnstone, and the name of a chapter in her book, which is called The Primacy of Movement, one of the chapters, chapter 12, is called Thinking in Movement.
Yes.
And this is what I see happening in my students, in my work as a Feldenkrais and focusing teacher, also in my work in helping my community prepare for a very possible earthquake in Vancouver. The focusing in the Feldenkrais and this way of thinking in movement helps us prepare for any event and helps us to find the comfort in being prepared, the comfort in step by step knowing that we can be on that empty stage. We can let the world come and we can be present. We can hold the whole of the situation. We can very softly rotate around our axis or hold the ball or the egg and let it pass from one hand to the other.
So what feels very nice as I listen to you is that sense that being in movement is also being in thinking. And it's not I have to move and then think or I have to think and then move, but being in thinking, being in movement is a quality. This is what's happening.
Yes, yes, yes. Maybe it's a good moment to mention one of my classes is Focusing and Dreams. And in 2009, one of my advanced students who was just about to complete her training as a focusing teacher, she was so very interested in dreams, and we loved working with dreams and focusing. I said, well, let's have a class. So we put a note on the Focusing Institute on the discussion list, and 57 people decided to come. So we had several classes concurrently. And it was just wonderful. All those people, those 57 focuses, are still very much in my life and in my awareness. And that was 6 years ago, and now we have a dream appreciation group process, it's called. It was pioneered by Janet Funder, a focusing teacher and coordinator in New York City. A crossing of the work of Eugene Genlin, his book, Let Your Body Interpret Your Dream, and the work of Montague Ullman, a Jungian analyst, who put together dream appreciation in a group context. Well, actually, Jean Gendlin, he wrote his dream book in the beginning with a class that he gave in the evening for workers who worked all day, and they could come in the evening to sit in a classroom and have time with Jean to work on their dreams. So, as we know, Jean Genlin is, and Mary Hendricks, his wife, who has pioneered much in the focusing world, they wish us to bring focusing to everybody in the world. And Montague Ullman wished for dreams to be an avenue for everyone, anyone, everywhere. So the crossing of Ullman and Genlin in the dream process lets us bring a way of working with dreams that balances what Ullman calls the safety factor that the dreamer and everyone in the group has an absolute foundation of safety, confidence, and trust in the process, trust in the timing, in the development of the class together, of their studies outside the class. And there is this safety factor. Right along with it, weaving along with it, is the discovery factor, the wanting to listen and hold and honor and cherish something new that is in the moment, that is coming through the dream and through the actual moment of working with the dream or holding the dream or even studying the way that dreams sometimes develop.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked a lot, yes.
Yeah, but so again, as you're talking there, at the same time as I'm following what you're saying, I'm also noticing that gentle, graceful movement you have. And so the added dimension I have to what you're describing is I have a visual sense of the process unfolding and
yes.
Paying attention to the dream.
Mm.
So what was it like in the class?
For the dream class?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yes. I have made a 12-week syllabus where we read from Genlin and we read from Ullman every week. Some people come with a great enthusiasm for the reading and discussing the reading, and perhaps they will bring a sentence or a phrase or a question from the reading, and it's very, very exciting for everyone. And others don't read at all, and it's completely fine. And they come to enjoy the process of the dream and to enjoy the excitement of the scholars who like to come and refine more and more the way the process is described in words. So it's a lovely balance that way. We begin with an attunement, usually with an active positivity these days, because that's become very popular since you created active pause. And then we use active pause throughout the dream process at transition stages. So we have some inspiration from the reading, just as much as is wanted by everyone. And then we come back to this scholarly aspect later, after we have done the dream work. Whoever likes to stay can stay, and we develop the scholarly aspect a bit more. So after an attunement and a brief touch with the writing and reading for the week, we usually include reading out loud from Jean Genlin's Appendix A in the Dream Book, where he gives wonderful, wonderful philosophical step-by-step renditions of the philosophy of the implicit.
Mm-hmm.
And we all enjoy that very much. And then we hold a moment of quiet and an attunement where people can sense if they would like to bring a dream or would like to listen to a dream, or perhaps if they would like to take an active role in the facilitator's process. It's a group where people are learning to bring the dream appreciation process into their teaching community or their perhaps their neighborhood, perhaps their school, perhaps even their workplace. Some people have a dream group one evening a week. So there are these three choices at the beginning. Bring your dream, or listen to your dream. Listen to someone bring a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Or perhaps you'd like to have a part in the facilitation of the process. And then people sort of sense what they would like, and usually someone brings a dream or a fragment of a dream, and always I have a little fragment that can be a backup to bring.
Mm-hmm.
If then we listen to the dreamer tell the dream. And each of us will write down, word for word, the dream as the dreamer speaks it initially.
Mm-hmm.
There is a beauty in this. And if some people find it difficult to write, then of course they don't need to do that. Someone else, there's enough of us but ideally to write at least a little bit. And if writing is not easy, maybe make a picture or something. And I pause here for a moment because one of my teachers from long ago is Francis Huxley, who is the grandson of Aldous Huxley and the son of Julian Huxley. He gave us an assignment for a whole week to write down everything that was said. Everything. So we were studying at that time with Ronnie Lang in London, and Francis Huxley was one of the people in the school. We had a class with Francis. And he himself typed on an old-fashioned typewriter. This was in the 1970s, 1980s. He still typed. So he had the movement in his typing, in his way of putting words on paper. So I always remember this when I first introduced the aspect of writing down the dreamer's dream. There's something about it that is, it's thinking and moving, thinking and movement, writing and moving. It's a way of engaging and honoring the dreamer's dream in a very particular way. Mm-hmm. And we see that in the dream group as it develops. We begin to see more and more the value in the various steps of the process. So the next process is we ask the dreamer if he or she would like to have the active ball from one hand to the other and sense whether she wants to go to the next step. Like in focusing, always the focuser is responsible, and the focuser has a choice as to whether to continue with the process or to ask for something a little different.
Yeah.
And the next step is clarifying questions, which we have lots of teaching from Eugene Genlin and Ullman, how we can ask questions in a gentle, clarifying way to assist the dreamer in holding the dream in the just as it came, just as it is being remembered, just as the dreaming moment itself. And then there's another pause, and we ask the dreamer about the next stage. And this one is where each person in the group makes the dream her own, or makes the dream his own. It's quite a striking occasion sometimes, quite surprising, quite sometimes a little bit daunting for the dreamer, and so we want to let the dreamer have lots of time to settle into this stage. And usually the dreamer has been an observer first, so she sees how the process works.
Mm-hmm.
And if not, then we add a bit of more safety support in this stage, where I would come and I would make the dream my own. I have a felt sense of the dream. I let the imagery develop in me of the dream. And it's not a very long process. It may be 3, 4, 5 minutes at the most. And the dream unfolds as if it were mine, and I speak it. In my dream, this came and that came. And then the next person, and the dreamer has a chance to interrupt any time. So after this, there is another pause, and the dreamer decides whether to continue, and usually he does or she does, and it's the dreamer's response. The dreamer responds to how was it when different people made the dream their own, and it's always very precious.
Mm-hmm.
It always is a development. And then there's another pause, and there is a time for asking the dreamer if she likes to continue, and then we have a process called search for contexts, how long ago did you have this dream? Was it last night? What perhaps during the day comes to you now, or 2 weeks ago, or 2 months ago? It widens the dream in that particular way. Then there's a pause, and if the dreamer likes to continue, we have what's called the playback. And that's when one person in the group reads back word by word the original text of the dream as the dreamer said in the beginning. And this again is so valuable. It's so illuminating. Almost always it brings a sense of wonder and peacefulness, a kind of acceptance and deepening presence of the dream for the dreamer and for everyone when the playback. And the playback is said slowly so that each sentence is received as it came in the beginning. And the dreamer always has a chance to respond. And then there's another pause and a stage, and the dreamer may welcome what we call orchestrated projections. That is, these are Ullman's terms for his appreciation process. And each person in the group will sense what are the gifts of the dream for the dreamer. And depending on the group, this can be quite a deep process, and it can be also a kind of just a gentle offering, like a touchstone. And the dreamer receives that, and there is, then the dreamer has what we call the last word. And the next week, when we meet again, we begin with the dream from the week before, so the dreamer can show a bit how the dream had woven into her life or his life, and how what wants to come together with that dream before we begin another process.
That feels very beautiful. And really get a sense of, you use the word weaving. And I really have a sense of, as you're describing this process of the weaving and the integration into the group and into one person's understanding and into one person's life.
And how nice this is for bringing, focusing, and if we like, a bit of active pause. And whatever it is that we bring into our community, this way of people coming together who may know each other or not know each other very well, but it's a nice bridge.
Yeah.
It has the safety and it has the discovery.
Yeah.
So they can go out and bring both safety, holding presence, and discovery, listening for something new.
Yeah. So maybe that sounds like a great place to end, that sense of safety and discovery. What do you think?
Yes, lovely. Thank you.
Thank you, Katerina.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.